Hello and welcome back to Matchroom Radio with David Diamante. That is me. I am your host, and it's been a couple weeks, man. We did our show down in Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico, but we are now back. We're refreshed. We're recharged. We're ready to jump right back into Fight Camp for 2021. It's going to be a great set of fights. And, of course, this Saturday show on DAZN is headlined by Conor Benn's fight with Adrian Granados. And he is joining us today, El Tigre. Adrian Granados, man, how you doing, brother? Great to see you.
Kiule, what's up, man? I'm feeling great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure, man. When did you get in?
I got in, Tuesday morning here. So we left Monday, Chicago, and like 6, and then we got here at 8 in the morning in England on Tuesday.
Same like me. How are you adjusting to the time all right?
Yeah. It took a day or two. It's kind of weird. It's my first time over here, so it's all brand new. But, I think with the experience of amateurs and just traveling as much as I have, it's just like you just kind of wing it and just kind of, all right, run with it.
So this is I know it's your first time in the UK. It is actually your first time in Europe too, right?
Yes. I've only gone to Canada, Mexico, and Puerto Rico in North America,
And now you're at a Holiday Inn.
Yeah, exactly.
Very exotic.
Oh yeah, super.
No, but how are you finding it so far? You enjoying it?
Yeah, very cool. I love the way everything's organized. This is my first time working with Matchroom Boxing and DAZN. And it's, like I said, they've got the right amenities. We're fighters. We don't need nothing too fancy. So, they got the right hotel service as well here. And I haven't had no problems with anybody. Yeah, very well-mannered people here in England.
Yeah, they're really, really nice people over here.
Yes.
Weren't you just down in Mexico training with the legend?
Of course I was.
JCC, yeah. Julio Zeta Chavez.
Estaba en Culiacán, Sinaloa.
Yeah, el León de Culiacán.
Yeah, ya sabes. No,
El gran campeón.
Mexicano, ya sabes. No, yeah, that's literally a boxing god in my eyes. It's like, I got into boxing because of him. I was raised by watching Julio Cesar Chavez. I remember the Chavez-Taylor fight. That literally is like my superhero movie. Like growing up, I know it all. Even the commentating with Jim Lampley, Larry Merchant. Like I know it like play by play.
I'll tell you, that fight, for the fans out there, if you don't know that fight, it is so important for boxing history to know that fight.
And yeah,
it's literally, when you say it's like a boxing movie, it literally is. It's better than Rocky. You can't script what happened. Exactly. And what went on afterwards with Meldrick Taylor.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's what it kind of shows, like, hey, you guys got to take care of, your mental health. You got to take care of how you're feeling. It's a very dangerous sport, rest in peace to all the fallen soldiers in the boxing world. I mean, there's a lot of fighters. I mean, we even still got the recent Pritchard Colon, who just got out of another surgery.
God bless Pritchard, man. What a great guy. Yeah. What a great guy. And also Patrick Day, which happened in your hometown.
Of course.
I'll never be over that. I'll never get over that.
Shoot. I mean, we have one in our own gym, Paquito, Francisco Rodriguez. It was George was in his corner. It was in Philadelphia when he passed away. It's an ESPN special and everything. Coach has been through enough. Like George has been in the game about 35 years, and he's had to deal with so many fighters that have came into the gym, and so many fighters that we've lost. Another one is my good friend Ed Brown. Rest in peace. He. We lost him to gang violence, and I mean, it's just, it's a sport where a lot of guys are trying to find it to get out of, trouble. And that's why it's just, it's rough when you, I had a personal relationship with that young man. And he's with us everywhere we go.
I remember in your fight against Broner, you had Bad Boy shaved into your head. Yeah. I know that was like your little brother.
Yep, that was him. Ed Bad Boy Brown.
I know that was like your little brother. And I know that Ed had it very tough himself. He'd been shot 3 times before.
Yeah.
Not only that, when he was 11 years old, his mom was killed in the E2 tragedy.
Yes.
Which is terrible. 21 people were lost in that.
Yep.
There was a fight that broke out in a nightclub in Chicago. the security guards supposedly pepper sprayed. The exits were, the doors, they had triple doors, but they only went in, not out.
Yeah.
And then there's rumors that one of the doors was locked with the chain and people got stampeded down. I said 21 people died. Ed Brown's mom died in that. He was 11 years old.
Yeah, yeah. And that was actually around the time when I met him. I fought his cousin in an amateur fight at the Sabre Room. It's a suburb outside of Chicago. I was George's opponent. I remember I beat him and George is yelling and mad because I was trying to be a good sport about it. I was raising his hand. He's like, no, get the hell out of there. Good, get, you know, what the hell? You're going to make that guy embarrass you? And I'm like looking at him. I'm like, man, like, what's this old man? What's wrong with him? I'm trying to be cool. You know, it was a good fight. And like, he's bitching at him on the way out. And then I see little Ed Brown, cute little kid, like, you know, just like smiling. I'm like, oh, hey. And sure enough, he's like, good fight, man. Good fight. And he shook up with me. I'm like, all right, but cool, for sure, champ. And then he ended up fighting and winning that day too. So. Yeah, man, we were raised together. We got David Diaz ready for Manny Pacquiao. I was 17 and Ed was 15. We were youngins, but we could fight both orthodox and southpaw. So we both went southpaw for David Diaz and did our best to, you know, get him ready. I mean, David fought him tough too. You know, he fought him pretty tough, but you know, that's when Manny was in his heyday. Like, you know, he was demolishing everybody. So it was. We knew the task was a tough one. Yeah, and actually, no, yeah. We lost. Yeah, it's like the brothers, I think, are all gone now, right? Yeah,
one died of OD, Prozac, and the other one was shot to death, just like Ed.
Yeah, and one was shot to death, and then another one OD'd, and, you know, I just... All the brothers are dead, yeah. It's too bad. I mean, the day and age, I think, right now is just rough. You know, people just falling into the wrong stuff, like, everywhere.
What do you think it is? What's going on over there in Chicago? I mean, listen, I'm in Brooklyn, so I know what it is. I'm in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, and unfortunately, you know, there's usually a couple shootings a night in my neighborhood.
No, yeah, I know. I mean, we both come from, you know, neighborhoods that are like that, and that's why it's just. The world's just going crazy right now. Like, it's, you know, obviously with COVID and just being held up, it's been feeling scary as of recently, you know, like Chicago opened up again, everything's open. And it's like, I even felt the, you know, just like the animosity in the air where I'm like, man, dude, I don't even want to be out. Like, it's just, it's dangerous. You know, I mean, shoot.
I understand that because even if you're not mixed up in something, there could be something popping off over there that you're not even a part of. Bullets, they don't have no names.
Yeah, no, it's funny too. Actually, a couple of weeks ago, I just had like somebody try to run up on me, and I was just having lunch, and it just it's sad because it's like I do my best, you know, to try to stay out of that stuff. I've lived in Chicago all my life, and I've had family, cousins, close friends that are involved in gang life and in violence, and you know, I just always steered away from it, but it somehow finds me all the time. Like this big scar I have on my nose, that just gang violence. Like, I literally was just out there. I was at a party. It was a college party. I was like fresh from the Mexican Olympic team. So I came back home and I was in the wrong neighborhood. I was. So that was probably, it was my fault for that. But yeah, no, dudes were like just talking. I'm trying to like, oh, okay. Yeah. They're like telling me about my colors. I'm like, oh, I think I was wearing Cubs colors. I was like, go Cubs, you know, like, come on, bro. Like, I ain't.
People don't know. Yo, listen, I was in Chicago in the 80s, and I had a cop come up to me and tell me to take my hat off because he says, yo, you don't want to wear this color in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm traveling through.
Yeah.
I was driving across the country with some friends.
Uh-huh.
He says, man, you can't wear that around here because that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, that is what it is. I mean, I remember I was raised in a little village in Pilsen, and that's pretty much like, people know La 26, 26th Street, that's like Mexico, like especially back in the day, like early 2000s and then in the 90s. And I went there, I think we went to go get some food or something just because we wanted something Mexican and like authentic. And yeah, like I remember we got checked, like, and the game bangers were literally like, no, well, why is your belt going that way? Like, my belt couldn't go to a certain direction. I'm like, man, like, come on, y'all. Like,
you had no idea.
Yeah, but it's just like they, you know, it's just the way of life for them, you know? I mean, if you say something wrong, if you speak up for yourself, it's like it's the wrong thing to do just because it's like that's their way of mind. Like, oh, you know, he ain't trying to be punked. Well, you know, you can't do that here. And it's just, you know, it's sad because I know some of them, it's like they don't have any other way out, so that's what they go into. But, you know, I mean, I've seen a lot of good people, too, come out of the hood that, you know, are you know, trying to make something of themselves. That's why a lot of people, too, they show me love all the time because they're like, man, dude, like, you from the neighborhood. You be around everywhere, and, like, you're doing stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm still trying, you know. I mean, the dream's not over. I still want to be a world champion. You know, I think I still have what it takes to become one. And, you know, hopefully with this fight on Saturday, we get a good solid win and you know, start heading for a stampede towards one.
We'll get to that in a second. There's a lot to talk about. But you were wrapped up in gang culture yourself?
Just not, like, I never wanted it, but it was just around me. I mean, I lived in, I lived in Cicero growing up. That's actually the neighboring suburb in, like, the first Southwest one. That's actually, we call it Capone's Town because that's where Al Capone led his revolt against the Chicago. But, when I first got there, it was, like, straight Italian and Polish and, like, it was white people. Like, we were, like, one of the first Mexicans on the block, first Mexican family.
Where was your family from originally?
My dad is from Nuevo León, and then my mom is from Chicago, but she's like me. Her family's from Mexico, from Reyes de Coahuila. So it's like,
sure,
Nuevo León and Coahuila, they're both neighboring northern states. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, my dad's the American dream. Like I love my dad. He's got a great story. You know, he crossed over, made it happen, been working he's been a part of a union. He's a pipe fitter. He's been part of the union for over 25 years. As of last year, he became an American citizen. I tell him he's the American dream. You know, I mean, he got my mom and him, like, they joined up and made a great, you know, union, and they got a house in Cicero when, like I said, it was nice at that time. Like, we were the first Mexicans in the neighborhood. And I remember he would tell me, like, yeah, no, it was, like, so quiet, so beautiful. But then obviously, you know, with gentrification and things, I love, you know, my heritage and my people, but, like, in the 90s, it was getting real bad in Chicago, and Cicero actually turned into, like, another, because it's Little Village, well, it's Pilsen, Little Village, and then Cicero, like, it's all lined up together, so it, like, turned into, like, a melting pot of just straight-up Mexicans, but it's, like, the younger generation from Chicago. Yeah, they were all into gangs. So especially in, like, the 90s, I remember it was really bad. Like, even Cicero, they had a block or an area that was called the Red Zone, because it was, like, every block was a different gang. And it was, like, you just – I would never go over there. Like, I would never go over there because my side was considered the nice side of Cicero.
Sure.
So, yeah, like, I love my family for, you know, doing their best to raise me and my brother the best they could. And now it's a hard working, like, it is all Mexican in Cicero, but Cicero is, like, it's almost like it's its own suburb. Shout out to Larry Dominic, that's our president, and, like, he knows it's an all Mexican, you know, neighborhood, but it's, like, it's a hard working Mexican neighborhood. Like, it's Hispanic owned businesses that are, like, paying the bills, doing everything. Like, we're all about hard working, and, like, you know, it's just the culture, you know, the culture.
What did your mom do?
My mom, she was always in telecommunications. You know, there was a time where it was actually rough for us. I mean, something had happened with my father that, you know, he had to put some time and it was rough. My mom had to hold it down.
How old were you?
I was 8 years old.
And how long was he gone?
5 years. Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, it was.
You have brothers and sisters?
One younger brother.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's
how close are you in age?
Very close, two, 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's my homie. That's my boy. You know, he's my biggest critic, but he's also my best friend, you know, like, so he's,
what does he, does he box at all?
He's my complete opposite. He you two would kick it off, like, amazingly. Trust me. He's okay. Like, he's super, like, artistic and, like, he uses the brain. I use the fist. You know?
Right.
I grew up always having the sports, the freaking, I never had toys. I played baseball for 10 years. I played basketball for 8 years. I played football for 6 years. I did soccer, hockey, golf, tennis, every sport I did it. Him though, freaking toys, and, like, now he reads, he writes. He's works for the stock market. You know, he's a runner for the stock market. He's been working for Bank of America and Merrill Edge for years. But on the side, like I said, he can rap. Like, he's a great artist. He's a musician. Like, he's a, we're complete opposites, but we're perfect for each other. Cause it's like, like whenever he needs, we'll talk sports all day, you know, we'll chop it up, you know, all his boys come over and it's just like, they just like, yeah, bro, y'all dynamic duo.
I love that. Yo, yeah. but speaking of sports just for a second, cause we got to talk about baseball just for a second.
Oh,
cause okay. The Cubbies, 2016, the Cubs won the World Series, right? So you're not a Sox guy, you're a Cubbies guy?
I am a Cubbies guy, totally, man.
I love it.
I mean, the boxing world knows it. I wore the Cubs colors when we fought Adrian Broner only because he was from Cincinnati. So I'm like, yo, the Reds versus the Cubs. Like, I'm rocking that. But no, yeah, I was obviously, like I said, the neighborhoods I was raised in, that's Southside. Like, that's Southside to the fullest.
Yeah.
But I always got to clarify my name because my homies, everyone give me, they always give me shit because they're like, bro, how are you not a Sox fan? And I'm like, I was 8 years old. I was a Cub as a little leaguer. And that's actually, I won my first Little League World Championship as a Cub. And, like, I mean, I was the youngest kid on the team, but I was actually the cleanup batter. And, like, it was a great team. Like, cool, one of the best years of my life. Great coach I had and just the whole vibe about it. But, yeah, so that's what it was. Like, I was, and sure enough, after that was the time when Sammy Sosa was killing it, you know, with Mark McGwire. And
I'll never forget that, man.
Yeah, so
I'll never forget that.
I'm the full Cubbies all day. And then all of a sudden, by the time I'm like 10, 11, 12, I really started painting. I'm like, wait a minute. We've been the world's worst losers for the last 100 years. Like,
well, the Billy Goat Tavern.
Oh, I knew about
it all. The curse of the Billy Goat.
I knew about the curse of the Billy Goat, everything. But I'm like, yo.
Did you believe in the curse?
I mean, of course I did. I'm a baseball player. Shoot, I was that kid, like I got to put my sock on this way first because, right. Like, I started getting on a roll.
Right, right.
I would pitch, you know, and the way I would pitch, like, I played. A lot of people I surprised when I started boxing because I played baseball for 10 years and I was serious.
What position did you play?
Everywhere. But it definitely, like, I focus was shortstop and pitcher. Those were my two focuses, and that's, like, either one I could have taken, like everyone says. But, yeah, no, like, I could play all over. I played back catcher first. But I played everywhere. And I remember, I got so many, like, memories where I even talked with my cousin. I actually got... When I get back, now my younger cousins, you know, my cousin's son is, like, becoming a beast now. He's 11. He's 11. He's playing with 13 and 14-year-olds. And I'm like, everyone's like, yes, it's in the blood. It's in the blood. So, yeah, I'm ready to start, you know, playing Theo over there.
I love it. I love those old folklore things with sports, the curses and stuff like that.
There was
supposedly this guy that owned a Billy Goat Tavern. He had a Billy Goat in Wrigley Field, and it was supposedly pissing off the fans,
right?
And then they kicked him out, and he said, "You're not gonna win a World Series."
Yep.
And it was since 1908.
It was a long time.
I
remember the year when they almost had it, when they had what was it, like, in 08, I believe, or 07. It was no earlier than that, like 06, something like that. They had Randall Simon. I remember they had Sosa was still Moises Alou. That was the Bartman issue. Remember with the Bartman ball when
I remember the fam
that got it. I was a part of that. I was in high school watching, so pissed.
Yeah.
I'm like, how can you do that? Like,
yeah.
But yeah.
Well, I mean, we in New York we had the curse of the Bambino.
Okay.
And that was, it's funny because, like, as a kid, you know, you find out that Santa Claus isn't real, the Tooth Fairy's not real.
Yeah.
But I still. Even as an adult, I really wanted to believe in that curse.
Yeah, of course.
That the Red Sox would never win the World Series.
Of course. That's what I was just going to bring up because I'm like, I know about the Red. Because I'm actually, and my coach hates it because I used to wear it before when I first started fighting with him. But I found out he was a Yankees fan. He's the biggest Yankees fan.
That's
I
mean, why me and George get along.
Yeah, he's a New Yorker just like you. But, like, he don't know. I like, my number two for baseball is the Red Sox. So, like, when I wear that.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, so when.
This interview was going well until just then. This just went left.
I know.
All right, so that's been great, and we're going to see you guys tomorrow now.
Yeah, no. Well, with that, same thing. When I was younger, I was really into being a shortstop, so Nomar Garcia-Parra was my favorite player.
Sure.
And then I loved pitching, too, so Pedro Martinez as well. So that's why I said it really didn't even have anything to do with the history. It's just as I grew, then I was like, oh, shit.
You just liked him. You know what's funny, man? In it was 2004 that the Sox broke the curse.
Okay? Yeah, yeah.
And I used to DJ back in the day in a lot of clubs. So I knew a lot of ball players because they used to come in my clubs.
DJ what?
I DJ'd everything. I played a lot of stuff.
No, I want to know the name.
Oh, my name?
Yeah, your DJ name.
Diamond Dave, baby.
Ooh. Yeah, I love come it. On. I'm in Dave.
So anyway, all these ball players used to come in my club.
Yeah.
And I was very friendly with them. So I used to go to a lot of games. I was living out in California at the time.
Okay.
One of the guys was Ellis Burks.
Okay.
And he got traded to the Sox.
Yeah, I remember.
And he was actually, yeah. I think he was the DL behind Big Poppy.
Okay.
I'm at the time now, in 2004, I'm in New York City. I'm DJing in New York. I run into Ellis in the streets.
Okay.
He's like, Dave, what are you doing? I was like, oh my God. Game 7 was coming up.
Oh shit.
This is against the Yankees. This is for the ALCS championship.
Yeah, yeah, right.
He gets me tickets. I go there. I'm sitting in the Sox fan section.
Oh my God.
Which was painful.
Yeah, of course. I'm like,
and the Sox just routed the Yankees.
Oh my
and
God.
It literally like
broke your heart.
It broke my heart.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I was happy because, you know, my guy was on the Sox.
Yeah, of course.
But I was heartbroken and like literally that was my last kind of thing that I believed in, like a tooth fairy. I believed in the curse of the Bambino, and that was it. It was out the window. And to be really honest, I love baseball.
Yeah.
But I've lost a little bit of my love for it since that, because I just, I still love you the sport, but it's like.
That hurt.
It hurt. It really hurt.
Yeah, well, right now I'm getting it because the Sox are killing, you know. Right. And I mean, but they worked for it. I mean, I'm not a Sox. That's one thing. I'm not a Sox hater. Like, the Sox are, man, they're grade A at talking stuff about the Cubs. Like, they are. Right. Oh my God, they give us the worst. But no, I'm happy for them. I mean, they're doing great. Hopefully, I mean, both teams are good. We fell off like a bad habit. I don't know what happened. Like, we were in tied with the Brewers like all season, and then we went on an 11 game losing streak like 2 weeks ago.
And we got to get off baseball for a second, because I know our fans are not going to want to hear about this. But the Indians just changed their name to the Guardians.
Oh wow, I did not
Cleveland
hear that.
Guardians.
Wow, that's crazy. No, I understand what the 2021, yo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But let's get to the important Chicago stuff.
Yes, sir.
Pizza.
Oh, God.
Who's your favorite? What's your favorite? Lou Malnati's, Giordano's.
Man,
Pequod's.
I went there and I couldn't eat the pizza because
you got to make weight.
Yeah.
Pequod's. I think that's my favorite.
Okay. Well,
it's one of my favorites in Chicago.
That's definitely there.
That but crust. Get
this is what a lot of people do know this in Chicago. I actually worked at Connie's Pizza. Connie's Pizza, Southside, right from, that's a White Sox sponsor, actually.
Okay.
And I was actually busting tables. George remembers I was busting tables when I fought Kermit Cintron. I was busting tables when I fought, it was undefeated fighter Mark Salser. He was 15-0. And I fought him at the White Sox Stadium. Like, they put it was in another Friday Night Fights on ESPN. And he actually dropped me twice. Worst I was ever hurt in a fight. And I actually came back and stopped him. And craziest thing is, that was his last fight. I retired him.
You know, it's funny. You talk about fighting Kermit Cintron. You talk about fighting these undefeated guys. I mean, you had four losses early. You lost your second fight. Pro fight, and then you lost to three undefeated guys: Frankie Gomez, Felix Diaz, and Brad Solomon.
Yeah,
but this is what I want to know, because you went on to have an illustrious career. I mean, you fought a lot of guys.
Yeah,
you really have.
Thank you.
And what I love about a fighter like you, and what I want to ask you, is early in your career, how did you and where do you get that belief in self? Because I know you can't do what you do without having it. I know you believe in yourself, and you should.
Yeah.
But where does that come from?
I always had a knack for sports. Like I said, I played all these sports, and I was captain of basketball team in grammar school, captain of my baseball team, captain of, you know, the volleyball team. You know, always one of the best players. And then I got into boxing, and immediately, like, I won a state championship. I went open after five fights. You're supposed to go open after 10 or whatever, but I went open right away. I lost to a fighter who had like 150 fights, and he gave me one of the worst beatings of my life, but I fought him tough, and I almost dropped him too. But in that same tournament, a year later, I beat him. And I remember I fought Olympians and beat them. I would go toe-to-toe with a lot of the best fighters around. You know, I just never been afraid to get in there with anybody, and I always hold my own with anybody. So, you know, that's why I believe, you know, I believe in my abilities. I know, like, if you're going to fight me, it's going to be, I'm going to find a way to make you fight. I'm going to find a way to beat you. I'm going to find a way to hurt you. You know, I may bang with you. I may box with you. It just depends what I'm feeling that's working, you know, and it's been fun. You know, it's been a wild ride. Definitely, like, if I go back, I'd probably choose wisely, choose wiser, like my opponents of.
You mean earlier in your career?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, because you think you just went in deep quick?
Yeah, what it was is I was in a rush to kind of get up there, and I was like trying to catch greatness. Like,
because you believed in yourself.
Yeah, right? I did. I thought I was something different. You know, I mean, even George knows about some of the local fights that we had in Chicago, or like that are not even on TV and stuff, or not like really known. Like, man, I put on, like, in Chicago, they already called me a legend. Like, literally, I was like, holy crap. Like, when I have kids that are younger or younger fighters, they're like all taking photos with the Chicago legend. But it's like, I've got so many like gym stories. I've got so many like stuff where it's like, people are like, nah, dude, Granados gets down. Like,
and ask about me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Ask about me.
Yeah.
Chicago legend, man. You got some champs there. Barney Ross, Tony Zale, although he was from Gary, Indiana, but he's Chicago.
Yeah, I got you.
Ernie Terrell. Yeah. I mean, these are Chicago boxing
David
legends.
David Diaz. My big bro. He was one of the first bigger names that George actually made me like push myself with him, and kind of showed me to myself, like, you see, you can hang with anybody. And I'm like, true. And then after that, I ended up going to Mexico to go train with Juan Manuel Marquez, and I got him ready for his fight with Juan Diaz. Because he was like,
baby bull.
Yeah, and he was knocking out all his sparring partners, so he had to send them home, and I was a little 17-year-old.
I mean, this is one thing that a lot of people I don't think know about you. You really are a student of the game. I mean, we're talking Salvador Sanchez, Eric Morales, Marco Antonio Barrera. Like, you know your boxing. So for you to go down there to be training with guys like Julio Cesar and Juan Manuel Marquez, I mean, that must have just been a dream for you.
Dude, we did it like homework. We were watching Solo Boxeo. It was Abner Mares fighting. This is when Abner was with Nacho Beristain.
Yeah.
And Nacho Beristain, obviously, I had just finished watching Pacquiao Marquez 1, you sure. know, the classic that made all those fights.
Right.
And I'm like, Papa, they're here. Nacho's here. And he's like, and it was the winter. And I'm like, pues vámonos. And yeah, sure. We took the drive right over. Cicero Stadium's where they fought.
Right.
And I'm like waiting outside in the cold and literally just like in and out waiting for. And we got him. And then I'm like, hey, ¿cómo estamos? You know, we talk, you know, meet him. And right away, he just grabs my shoulder. You could just tell already the old man, you know, starting to grab my muscles.
He's
and like,
trying to see what you
yeah,
got.
Yeah, like,
right?
What's up? And I'm
sizing
like,
you up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then he's like, ah, bueno, mijo, you know, like, well, young man, you know, we will. I'm going to get you. And he got me in touch with the manager at that time, Jaime Quintana. And sure enough, man, flew me out there. And that's why, like I said, I love my family so much, because I was still in high school, finishing up high school. And my dad literally was just throwing me a little money here. And I made my way out there, and it just worked out. I mean, I literally would train so hard and literally finish right before Juan got there. When Juan got there, I'd go outside, grab a juice, and come back and just watch him. Like, just watch greatness.
I mean, how much did you learn from that? It must have been invaluable.
Crazy. Like, I always tell people, it was like studying abroad, but for boxing. Like,
sure,
I was
sure.
literally going to school. Like,
absolutely.
I just watched the way how disciplined he was, how hard he trained, like the craft, the little things of just focusing. You know, he would do a combo like over and over and over again, but he would like perfect it. You know, he'd perfect a punch, there's a lot of times too when I get into it, and a lot of people even tell me, they're like, man, dude, like you fight like Marquez. And I'm like, man, dude, who do you think I was mimicking all that time? You know, like,
yeah.
But then obviously, like, one thing too that like with George, he would always say, like, you got to make Adrian Granados. You like whatever fighters we had, you got to be you. And sure enough, that's when I, you know, started really opening up my mind. And that's why, like I said, there's times where I watch Hector Camacho when he was younger, and I used to love the way he boxed and moved, and like he'll beat you up and move around, dance around you. And, you know, just Sugar Ray Leonard, I used to love watching him. Tommy Hearns, you know, I always had a good right hand because of the pitching and baseball so many years. So trying to get that, you know, straight right. You know, the work ethic of Marvin Hagler. Just like you said, I love boxing. I'm a student of the game.
You know, but being a student of the game, let me ask you another question, because this is tough. I mean, first of all, I got so much I want to talk to you about. The Amir Amin fight, to me, really, in a way, made your career.
Oh, yeah.
Because that, I mean, if you look at your CV after that, you have fought a who's who.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a who's who.
Yeah.
From Broner to Porter to Garcia to Robert Easter Jr. to Fortuna to whoever.
Yeah.
You know, it's really been a who's who, which is very impressive. Now, you've come out on the losing side of a lot of these fights. However, this is what I wanted to ask you, because you are a student of the game, and you know that sometimes this happens, where you put in a spirited effort, but the judges might not give you the nod.
Yeah.
So knowing this, like, for example, this fight this weekend, you're fighting Conor Benn, mm-hmm. okay? He's his dad, obviously very, very famous, a legend. Conor is making a great name for himself here. Do you feel you need to get a stoppage to beat Conor? Like, can you beat him on points? Could you have beaten Broner on points? Could you have beat, you know what I'm saying? These fights, like, how do you... As Adrian Granados, if I'm Tigre, if I'm thinking, how do I get to that next level to beat these guys?
Yeah.
Because you're getting these fights.
Right.
But you're not getting the nod. Yeah. You're there and you're competitive. How do you get over that hump?
Pretty much plain and simple. I have to dominate. That's the only way. You know, with Broner, I believe I won that fight. I did enough to win. I would have been happy with a draw with that fight, but the fact that I lost, it sucks. Like, that's what all I hear. Everyone, oh, you beat Broner. I know. Look at my record. It's an L.
Right. Exactly. People forget about it. People don't know. People forget.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, like, my fight with Amir Imam, like, I was just, I mean, at that point, I had already had a couple fights like that. My fight with Brad Solomon, that
yeah, one, man.
Like, it was pretty much the same fight as the Amir Imam fight, except I didn't stop him.
You didn't stop him.
Yeah.
And he got the nod.
And I remember even Oscar De La Hoya was tweeting about it, that I deserved it. Like, everyone knew. And
right.
The other one was Felix Diaz was before that. I'm beating him up for 8 rounds, and then in the 9th round I actually got caught, and I ended up breaking my foot, but I finished the fight on my broken foot because I knew I did enough to win,
and they didn't give it to
and
you.
I didn't give, and it wasn't even close. So that's why, like, when I tell people, like, about me, it's like I have to dominate, and it's not fair. I mean, even this last fight I just had where I got a draw, like, I believe I dominated. Like, it was a competitive fight. Sanchez was a tough fighter from Arizona. Undefeated kid, 11-0. I think one draw maybe, but he was tough. But I knew, like, he wasn't on my level, so I just outboxed him. And I did what I think I had that fight 6-2, fight of three. If it was an 8-rounder, if it was close, it would have been 5-3. But it was definitely 6-2 in my eyes. Like, I opened up, boxed him, and then he caught me with a body shot that hurt me. So it was like 2 rounds there that I had to play it smart. But then after that, I got back to dominating him. I ended up sending him to the hospital. He's got like he had a lemon for an ear that got, you know, cauliflower ear,
mm-hmm.
and he was just all beaten up. And I came out clean. And I mean, that it was heartbreaking, because I'm like, it's just over and over. Like, I got to kill the guy, you know? Like, I hate that, because it's like, I'm literally out there. They don't understand that, you know, somebody dedicates their life to this, you know? Like, I get out there and I train. I get out there and do this. Like, I've been doing this for 16 years already. I'm like, my body's tired, but I still know this is my job. So that's why I try to go as hard as I can. And
You and I talked last night, not to interrupt, but you and I talked last night. And George, I'm going to be talking about you in a second. So, I mean, you can leave, but maybe it's better if you leave.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. By the way, we're talking about George Hernandez, incredible coach and an incredible man who does so much for Chicago and for boxing. And we're going to talk about George
in
just
definitely.
A second here. But what was I saying? I don't remember. You fought twice so far this year, like you said.
Yeah.
Anyway. Cool.
Well, no, you were talking about the Amir Imam and, like, the politics of it.
Yeah, it's just, it can be tough, and it's one of those things where, you know, I don't know. When I see, like, when we started this conversation, I was talking about how you had losses early.
Yeah.
But you, out of all these guys that you fought, which is an incredible list, I just went through them, Danny Garcia, Sean Porter, Javier mm-hmm. Fortuna,
yeah.
you know, Robert Easter Jr., Adrian Broner. I mean, this is a murderer's road to who's who, right?
yeah.
No, I mean, it's a big list.
Yeah.
But you've never fought for world title.
Yep, that's the craziest thing that everyone's still,
it's
like,
it's really
and
pretty amazing.
And that's what I was getting ready to get into. So after I beat Amir Imam, he's the number one fighter in the world. It's the upset of the year. I knew that I had to dominate, and I dominated him so much that I stopped him.
It was, by the way, that fight was in Quebec, and, like, your face... bro, like, it's one of those, I hope that, like, you have a freeze frame of that and you blow it up on your wall, because it's beautiful, man.
Yeah, no, I have a beautiful shot of it where it's me on my knees, like, thanking God. And then it's George and my dad both jumping and rejoice. Like, they're just so happy because they know what I've been through too. Like it's,
of course.
I have that shot. And yeah,
definitely. And that, and like I said, that opened, because people were, there's a lot of haters out there. Oh, how does Granados get these big fights? Yeah, but look what he's done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
No, I know. And that's why too, it's funny. Like, it's, I try not to get into it because I know, you know, everyone's got, you know, a lot of people are pretty green on their knowledge of it, and they're just quick to bash somebody and call them a bum. I mean, I have 8 losses.
Yeah, but you got to watch the fights.
Exactly, but that's what I mean. Like, I literally, I just barely watched the video because I don't like getting into that stuff, but I mean, I'm studying my opponent now, so I'm watching Conor, and people were talking about that fight with Florian Marcoux or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's like throwing shade at me, like, "Oh, you're fighting a guy with 9 losses." And I'm like, "This Granados guy." And I'm like, "All right, bet, bro. You don't need. I don't know who either of you dudes are." I'm like, "Y'all are trying to get at my level, you know?" Like, but it is what it is, man. Like I mean, which by the way, he's like talking about, "Yeah, I got 9." I looked at his record. I'm like, "Dude, your best guy was 6-0. All right, big whoop. Like, you know, you're 8-0. Like, slow down, bro. You got a long way to go." They don't understand how much. Like, I fought Leonardo Tyner when I was like 7-1-1 or
undefeated.
And Leonardo Tyner, he had just fought Canelo. Like, Kermit Cinchon, when I fought him, he had just fought Canelo. Like, how am I?
Kermit was a beast back in the day. Yeah, man. I was
Kermit's, the way they were, I was his comeback fight.
Yeah.
I was his comeback fight. And then on ESPN, Teddy Atlas and Facebook both had me winning 8-2, and it was a draw in my hometown in Chicago. Like, it's like,
what do you think that is? Why are you not getting the nod?
I have no idea. I like literally, that's why, like, it's just
because do you think it's that? Like, all right, I know, like, the Broner fight, for example, you know, Broner's a guy, he's very brash, he loves to talk. You are a gentleman. You are a throwback fighter. First of all, you'll fight everyone. Second of all, you're very respectful. Mm-hmm. You just are. Like you said about the people here in the UK, they're very well-mannered. You're a very well-mannered guy. You really are. You're a great guy, and you're very respectful. But do you think sometimes that hurts you in the fans' eyes because you're not out there talking smack and talking this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know, because me too. I mean, after everything I've been through, I'll still defend myself. You know, I'm still, I'll talk my shit too. But like, and it, like, yeah, it sounds like maybe I'm a, because people are like, oh, like, I'm a sore loser, I'm a whiner and stuff. But you guys don't understand, like, it'd be different if 4 of those wins or 5 of those wins go my way, I look like a freaking animal. Like, I'm like 28-3. Like, I got a great record, you know? And it's sure. Like, just because it's, and it's over and over and over again. Like, it's to a point now where I'm like, once I go to the decision, I'm nervous once they start, because I already know. Or it's like, I'm not even nervous. I'm just waiting for them to rob me again, you know? And it's just like,
Did you think you had won the Broner fight?
I did.
I know you thought you'd won it, but did you think you had won it with the judges?
No, I was hoping for a draw. I think because he realized, he didn't think I would do what I did in that fight, and then when I did, he like started getting, he was holding me a lot, and they would never warn him from holding. Like, that was all engaged by him.
Sure,
but he did it on purpose.
Also in the Porter fight.
Yeah, that one, which by the way, who is that? Rosado, right?
Gary Rosado.
Gary Rosado. I wonder what the hell they did for you, sir, because I have some peace of mind for you whenever I meet you, because I swear to God, you defended that man so much. When he hurt his hand, like, he turns and I'm ready, and he like dies. There's a time where he catches me with a big shot at, like, right at the belt, and then he tackles me. Like, dude, like, what was it? He kept pushing me, like, he would split us up and keep his hand on me and then push me again and then push me again. And I'm like this close, like, man, bro, who how much they pay you? You fucking, like, I was so pissed, like, because I know the sport of boxing. I've been in this, like, that was the most unfair. It couldn't be more obvious that referee was protecting Sean Porter in that fight. Sean Porter, total respect for him. I'll take that L. I'll say, because he outboxed me when I planned to outbox him. It was a good fight. I'm the only one who had him running, too. Like, he was done at the end. He was done. Yeah, maybe about his hand, but he knows I rocked him. He know I had him, too, because I was fighting him tooth and nail. And that's why, too, that was my first fight in New York that I fought, my only fight. And, man, I've had mad love, like, every time I go, because I know, like, the real fighting fans there, they're like, man, you a dog. You fought him like a dog. I've loved New York every time I've gone. Quick side note too: the pizza there is awesome as well.
Killer,
killer. That thin slice, that dollar pizza.
No,
man.
I don't mess with no dollar pizza. But well,
I'm sure you get that gourmet good stuff. But
just the regular spots.
I love the food out there too.
It is really good.
Yeah.
Speaking of Barclays, we did a 4 years ago today. I was actually interviewing Adrian Broner,
okay,
and Mikey Garcia before their clash,
okay,
which
nice.
Was the fight after your fight with him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was yeah, the fight. I remember that.
Yeah,
I remember
you
that.
Fought earlier that year,
and that's why. Like, no, man, it's definitely like these politics, because I remember back in those days, man. After I beat Amir Imam, I was supposed to be set up right. Like, I was actually supposed to fight Ruslan Provodnikov next.
Sure.
Mikey Garcia was in the talk already. I remember I met Mikey and he knew I was coming. So he like he was real nice with my manager, because he was trying to work something out with my manager, I think. So he was like, oh, hey, what's up? What's up? Then he seen me. He's like, oh, hey, how's it going? Like, I'm like, oh, man, like, all right, like, cool.
It's like that?
Yeah, because I'm a fan of Mike. I was going to be like, what up, bro? How's it going? Hey, man, you know, but no, once I say, I'm like, okay, bet. It's like
so
that.
You knew
like,
what it was.
Yeah, I knew it, but I knew they knew I was coming for everybody, because sure. They knew already, like, man, yeah, this dude will fight everyone and he'll fight everyone tooth and nail. Like, you already see what he's doing so far. But yeah, no, that's where the politics came in. I mean, it's Don King got mad we didn't get the rematch.
Of course.
They didn't get, but
of
the
course.
Thing, but that was his only
fault. It was a huge setback for him.
It was his fault. We gave him a rematch clause and we had a set price for the rematch. He accepted it. Then two days later took it away. Like, no, we don't need it. So then when I beat him, I'm like, well, it's not going to cost you that no more, because, you know, you thought I wouldn't beat your guy. So we had a better fight on the table with Ruslan Provodnikov. Showtime loved it. I was a Cinderella story. I literally was still working a full-time job before I got that big win. And what's it called?
Ruslan was a dog, too.
I know,
style.
And that's why it was going to be perfect, like, because yeah. We were both
styles
dogs.
Styles
like
make
that.
Fights.
And he ended up, Don King, I already know this is like, this is behind the wraps, but I already did my homework. I already knew that this happened. Don King talked to Al Haymon, like, hey, no, because my manager at the time was still talking to him, and I was telling him, I don't want this fight, dude. Like, let's move on. Like, I beat him up. I stopped him. Let's move on. And, just because he was flirting with the idea with him, and he Don King told Al, no, we're talking about a rematch. And sure enough, he pulls me. When they made the announcement that I'm already in the mode to fight Ruslan, they announced that he was fighting John Molina. Mm. And that John Molina beats him.
Yep.
And I was just like, oh, my God. I was at my house, my boys. I was watching that fight, pulling my hair. Like, I would have beat both those guys. Like, I was just so mad.
Frustrating.
And that's when I was on ice for a whole year. I was blacklisted pretty much. I couldn't get a fight at 140. And then I got offered to fight Broner at 47. And then after Broner, it was like, I'm ready to go back down to 40. And then I get offered Sean Porter. And I'm like, dude, all right, fine. And like, you gave me one welterweight. Then you give me a bigger welterweight. Like, come on, y'all.
How do you do you feel more comfortable at 140? Or you've settled into 147?
Now I'm settled to 147. I'm 31. I've been making 140 since I was 15. Yeah, so the
you're
body's
ready for 147.
Asking. Yeah.
Speaking of 147, the division right now, there's some big guys in the division. Right, obviously Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford, you got Manny Pacquiao, Ugas. Who do you fancy in that division? Who do you think's the top dog out of there?
Man, I think like everyone else, I think what's it called? I'd say Spence and Crawford are the elites. But I mean,
let's say they tangle. Who? What happens?
Man, I love that fight so much.
I know, mean, me too.
They're both.
We all do.
They're both so good at what they do. So it's like you don't know what would happen. I think. There's more that Terrence brings, like, as far as the overall fighting. But Errol is so, like, disciplined in what he does, and he's so strong. And I think naturally he's just the bigger man. So it's just, like, I can't even side. I want to say Crawford, but then, like, you know, like I said, Spence is the bigger dog, I think, there, like, as far as the bigger man. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm just like everyone else. I'm waiting for them to hash it out so they can make it happen.
Well, let me ask you this, because Pacquiao and Spence are about to tangle. Do you like that fight?
I love that fight. I think Manny Pacquiao is one of the best of all time. I mean, he's going to be respected forever. I mean, for this, you know, obviously what he just did with Thurman, that, like, I watched that in Mexico.
Incredible.
In and it was beautiful. And, I mean, you know, shout out to Keith Thurman, because, I mean, he's always showed me respect, too. But yeah, no, Manny's a dog, you know, he'll find a way. And that's why too, no, like, I'm rooting for Manny. I'm siding with Spence for sure. Like, the most public, younger, bigger, stronger.
So you think Spence will win, but you want Manny to win?
I want Manny, and I won't be surprised if Manny wins either, because he'll find a way.
It's hard to bet against Manny.
Exactly.
But at the same time, Spence is looking really good.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to wrap it up soon because my producer is over here wanting me to wrap it up. But I still have some things to talk to you about real quick. We haven't even talked about Connor yet.
Yeah.
But I'm still waiting to get to that. I'm sorry, Scott. We'll get here, man. But I got to talk to my man, Adrian. We didn't talk about George yet. And we did talk very shortly about your parents and what they did and how important they are. But they really helped you a lot in your career, that doing PR, nutrition, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But also, George Hernandez, such an important figure in Chicago boxing, in your boxing career.
Yeah.
Just an amazing man. Yeah. With an amazing story also, and I'm sure you know a lot of his background, and he's got a really heartbreaking story too.
Yeah.
Where when his parents split, his father dropped him and his brothers off at a police station.
Yep.
And said he didn't want them.
Yeah.
It's just literally heartbreaking. I mean, there was a story the other day that broke my heart. I was telling my girl about it. Some guy drove on the highway, stopped and put a husky out on the side of the road and just drove off, and the dog was chasing it, but somebody picked it up, and then now the dog's in a good home. But you know, that literally happened to George in a way. And it's terrible. And I know that, you know, you guys lost Ed Brown. The things that, it just seems like there's a lot of tragedy that has kind of been around this, but at the same time, it's built a lot of strength.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a double-edged sword, how he always says, because he's always trying to get out. He's dying to retire. You can tell. He's been at it for so long, and he's a tired old man. You know,
he had a stroke too.
You know, he's dealt with a lot of us. I mean, it's not easy doing what he does. He's training a public facility in one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in Chicago. Which, you know, it's like Chicago's already known worldwide for our violence, you know?
So unfortunately, yeah.
So it's just like, no, man, it's but then again, like what he always tells me is just like, it's a beautiful sport that is like, I get a little kid that just wants to train, and he's like, bro, and he starts getting good, and it's like, and then you just grow attached to him. And that's that's why I call him the godfather of Chicago boxing. Cause it's like, everyone knows George. Everyone knows once he started hearing that voice screaming or whatever, George, crazy ass George.
He saved a lot of lives, and I just want to give him a huge shout out. You know, he was sitting here earlier in the interview.
Yeah.
But he's a big part of it. So this weekend, what's going to happen, man? Connor Ben, big fight. What happens?
It's gonna be a good fight. I think it's gonna be a tooth and nail fight. I think you know, we're both gonna be tested. You know, I'm excited for this fight. You know, I know he's very brash and very vocal about how he feels about himself and his abilities. You know, but now he's playing. You know, now he's moving up. You know, now it's like they're putting in another test. You know, what I'm not really liking though is that they're looking past me already. They're already looking at he's calling me a stepping stone. It's like, all right, bet you're going to find out, you know, cause it's not the first time I've been in this position, you know? So, you know, I'm just ready to do what I got to do. I'm focused and I'm ready.
I can't wait to see the fight. I think it's going to be a hell of a fight. And like we've always said, styles make fights. So it should be very, very exciting. We do have fan questions here, so I'm going to end with that. But before we do, I got to know, because we kind of got off this topic just real quick. All right, favorite Italian beef?
Damn. I would say Al's.
Yo, that's my guys.
Yeah, Al's
that's
beef.
My guys.
Al's beef, yeah. And then they actually
Tony's. There's Luke's, but Al's.
Yeah,
those are my guys.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Very cool. And your favorite dog?
A Chicago dog. Like just mustard.
No, but I mean like Portillo's.
Oh,
Flubba Dub Chub. Like who's?
I'm between Portillo's and Vienna.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, but it's gotta be Chicago style. No ketchup.
No.
Oh, it's a New York thing too, as well.
Never ketchup.
And that was another thing I did in New York real quick. I was walking on the street. I grabbed a pizza, cheap one, like I said, and it was fire. And then I kept walking. And I found like just somebody with a hot dog stand. I'm like, bet, let me get it and. Fire.
All right. Here's the fan questions. Johnny Ellis asks Adrian, the 100-90 scorecard against you versus Robert Easter Jr. is one of the worst scorecards in boxing history.
Thank you so much.
How did you dust yourself off from that disgraceful decision? It still grates on me now.
Man, it was, you know what, just, I love, you know what it is, it's the fans, people saying that, and not only that, people knowing that, you know, I have more wins than I should. But yeah, that one was pretty bad. I actually, like, from what I heard, I spoke with his family at the hotel, and I believe he went to the hospital after that fight. I looked at the fight a couple times, but I mean, it was no way that scorecard should have ever happened. And I mean, I Konkipak's numbers, I outlanded him in every category. He boxed well, but I believe I controlled the action. I controlled, like, the pace of the whole fight. So, I mean, that, yeah, that was another tough one.
You know, last night you and I were talking, man, late night. I was out smoking a cigar and we were chopping it up. And you told me that you really even have thought about walking away from the sport because of this kind of stuff.
Yep, that was in the last fight. I actually almost got suspended or fined in California because I went off on the judges. I'm like, you guys literally are ruining my life. Like, you're bringing down my pay. I don't want to do this anymore. Y'all make me want to quit. Like, I don't want to fight no more. Why? Because you guys, I'm tired of this shit. And it literally, the commission actually started, they're like, dude, you're about to get fined. Like, stop. And I'm like, nah, but it's fucking bullshit. I'm tired of this shit. Like, you know, I literally feel like I should have been a world champion already. At least at 140 for sure. I never got that shot. And like I said, I was a 140 pounder getting served to 47s. You know, hopefully before I retire, I can at least say that I fought for a world title. Like, at this point, I don't even care if I win the world
title. You just want a challenge
for
one.
Yeah, let me just say, well,
I fought
for one.
I'll tell you what. I mean, Conor is ranked top 15 in like three of the yeah. sanctioning bodies. So yeah. this hopefully will be a step forward depending on the outcome of the fight.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Theo Nazzi one asks Adrian, you've boxed on PBC for a while now. Have you ever met the elusive Al Haymon, or is it all over the phone? What can you tell us about him?
I'm another one on the outside, but definitely I've gotten the relay directly from the mouth, and I've, you know, gotten the checks where it's, you know, it's directly from them. So it's like they know of me. We've parted ways safely, you know, or I mean, on good terms. I definitely appreciate Mr. Haymon for all the opportunities he gave me, and they were going to continue giving me. It just, this fight came up and it was the perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
But definitely, yeah, I appreciate, I mean, they helped make me who I am. And I mean, they even say they owe me one, you know, because I mean, they know about some of the stuff that have happened. So no, I never met Mr. Haymon, but I believe he does. He does exist.
Oh, he definitely. Yeah. I've met him.
Okay, there we go.
I have absolutely met Mr. Haymon, and he's a wonderful guy. He's an incredibly smart man.
I believe.
So he does exist. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Lucas Henderson asks Adrian, given your amateur accolades, finishing with over 75 wins, including winning the Junior Golden Gloves and being on the fringe of the Mexican Olympic team, have you underachieved as a pro to date?
I would say so. Like I said, for just political reasons, I've had problems too. Like my first promoter, you know, I definitely have love for them, but they didn't believe as far as I would go. You know, they didn't really push me when I was with it. That's when I started stepping up, like, yo, I'll fight any of our guys. Like, they wanted to keep peppering me and just kind of feed off of my ticket sales, because I was a good ticket seller. I used to hustle the tickets hard. Like, I'm a popular kid in Chicago, so like in high schools and colleges and stuff. So I would always bring my tickets, you know, out, and he just kept, you know, and then finally I'm like, nah, dude, like, I'm signed with you. Why do I keep doing it? I'm like, you know what? I'm better than all these guys he had like seven guys. And sure enough, he ended up making a deal with someone else, and then they fell off. And then I had so I was in court with them for like a year and a half, couldn't get out of it. Then once I got out of it, I was just like struggling, couldn't get it. And then finally, once I got on, I was like, all right, give me everybody. So I wish I did it right. I wish I would have had maybe better management. I mean, it was literally a mom and pop shop. Me, my dad, my brother, and my mom. Like, that, we just did it on our own. We never
did the best you could. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things, like nowadays with the whole Mayweather culture of the O.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in the culture of the O, right? Yeah,
and that's what I went up against too all the time. Because I, well, like, what had happened with that first loss in Mexico, we actually got jobbed. I beat the dude, dropped him, and everything, but I fought him in his hometown. But then that's the thing. People don't know. I actually have like two or three more wins in Mexico that they're just not on my record. So the same thing was happening with this fight, that it was not going to show up. Nacho was literally just getting me warmed up. And then he was going to send me to the U.S. to get my real career started. So when I fought over here, I was supposed to be fightless. But then I fought here two or three times, and then that loss came up. So then, like, it's like that kind of messed me up. Because, yeah, I was following the Mayweather idea, you know, protect that O with all your might.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But it's a shame, because you have fighters like Ali, and you have fighters like, you know, obviously Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran. I mean, these are great fighters in history.
Yep.
that have had Pacquiao. I mean, they've all had losses, but they're legends.
It's different. Yeah, it's just like I said. It's almost like now you need a real boxing fan. Like there's casuals and then there's real boxing fans, and real boxing fans know what's up.
Well, I hope that people have gotten to know you a little bit better. It's just been wonderful to talk to you. I wish you the very best of luck this Saturday. And this Saturday for you guys out there, please tune in to DAZN. Download the app if you don't have it. You can watch it on your tablet, your smartphone, your computer, your TV, whatever you want, but get it. And until tomorrow, I am David Diamante from Matchroom Radio signing off.